This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's great to have you with us for the Monday edition of the Noon Business Hour as another trading week begins. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We're seeing some sunshine this afternoon, a high temperature of 39. We're at 39 right now. The wind chill index is 35.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Just about the last 20 minutes or so, the market started tanking. Let's get an update now from Bloomberg with Elisa Parenti.
That's exactly right, Cisco. And the Dow is now down 252 points. With all the losses we've seen in the month of December, we're down more than 6.5% across the board. The Dow is now at 23,852. NASDAQ down 66 points to 68.43. S&P also down to 25.73, losing 27 points or more than 1%. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is down 1%. And by the way, our local benchmark for the month lower by 8%. President Trump slammed the Fed on the eve of a pivotal policy meeting for even considering another interest rate hike. In a tweet, he argues against an increase, saying, "It is incredible that with a very strong dollar and virtually no inflation, the outside world blowing up around us, that the Fed is even considering yet another interest rate hike." The FOMC starts a two-day meeting tomorrow. Futures traders are putting the odds at greater than 70% that there will be a hike this time around. And sentiment among U.S. home builders is at the lowest level since 2015. According to the National Association of Home Builders, when you put it with November's slide, you're looking at the biggest two-month decline since October 2001. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. And on today's Noon Business Hour, besides the other topics that we're going to be talking about, will the Me Too efforts to clean up the workplace overdo it and actually end up shunning female workers?
It is Stock Picker Monday. An investing pro will join us to give you some advice for your portfolio. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The impact of the Me Too movement is being felt in the workplace. It doesn't always benefit women. We're going to cover that in our next segment. Right now, data from home builders out today. While the week ahead will be including a meeting of the Federal Reserve, its announcement on interest rates. We're joined by Bob Ruska, chief economist at Fact and Opinion Economics here in New York City. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Bob. What do you think about the Fed? Is it going to be raising rates?
Well, I hope it doesn't. Actually, I think that I have to say I agree with just about everything the president said, although I think that the fact that he said it the way he said it is unfortunate. But I do share his opinion that the world looks like it's in pretty bad shape. We're seeing the mortgage market hit pretty hard. The housing market is weak. Home builders are really being hurt. Home affordability is, in the last 10 years, it's been worse than this only 4% of the time. That's pretty bad. There'll be a lot of things you can point to. We had a weak Empire State Index today on manufacturing. There's a lot to be concerned about. I don't understand the Fed's willingness to plow ahead and to say, oh, we'll pause next time. It's like saying, I'm going to plow through that crosswalk of school children and I'll stop at the next crosswalk.
Weren't we 5 or 10 minutes ago celebrating the economy and how well it was doing? What's happened here in the last few months?
Well, I think the Federal Reserve sort of drank the Kool-Aid of fiscal excess too deeply. Certainly, fiscal policy did help to stimulate the economy. Remember, we also kind of had a rebound off of some hurricane-affected spending and then auto buybacks people had to do because their cars were destroyed in hurricanes. So there was a period in the first, 6 or 8 months of the year where there was a lot of pent-up spending for different reasons, right, to replace destroyed automobiles because there were tax cuts, all of these things. And I think the Fed thought that it was more durable than it was. I mean, it turns out that was just a little bit of a bounce. And now we're also looking at a lot of headwinds. We're looking at weak foreign growth. We're looking at trade wars. We're looking at a lot of different things. I think that the Fed got, caught up in the enthusiasm of the day too deeply.
Let's talk about oil for just a couple of moments, because you have it just barely hugging to $50 a barrel here today. Very, very briefly, it was down below $50 a barrel. Is there something psychologically important about that $50 mark and just staying at least above that?
Well, I think in markets, you know, the big figures tend to attract a lot of attention. I don't know that 50 is an important technical level on oil, but, you know, certainly in a general sense, people tend to look at the round numbers, 50, 60, 70, 80, you know, 100. These are sort of stalking points for markets anyway, to get by and to get beyond. I think oil has a problem right now, and we're trying to sort out exactly how bad it is. We've still got the you know, the sanctions on Iran oil, and it's not clear whether those are going to be made more effective or whether Iran is going to effectively be able to cheat. So that's going to have a lot to do with what happens with oil prices in the period ahead.
Home builder sentiment dropped. How important is new homes to the wider economy?
Yeah, well, let's understand. I mean, it's a small sector of the economy, but when people buy homes, you also have existing homes. They wind up buying, you know, new carpeting, new appliances, new furniture. It's associated with a lot of other spending, so it's important. But let's also remember, if the Fed's raising rates, this is how monetary policy works. You know, you can't complain that that the nail is yelling ouch when you hit it with the hammer and you're trying to build something. The nail's going to yell ouch a lot. If the Fed is determined to raise rates, it's going to keep hitting this nail on the head, and it's going to continue to hurt. Again, what we see is that over the last, viewed over the last 10 years, housing affordability now is very, very poor. But if you view housing affordability over the last, back to 1986, affordability has been better only 30% of the time. So if the Fed takes this long view of affordability, it's going to say, well, houses are still very affordable. If the Fed looks at the last decade, it's going to say, whoa, maybe we've overdone it. So what's the Fed standard for sort of neutrality here? I get a feeling that the Fed thinks in terms of, you know, older, longer-term time series, and the Fed still thinks that interest rates need to be higher, although how much higher, the Fed has been prevaricating about that.
What would you like to hear the Fed say, the Fed chairman say?
I'd like to hear him say that the Fed sees the economy, you know, in balance for now, and that they're going to make policy going forward depending on data and depending on circumstances. You know, the Fed is supposed to be data dependent. However, they've had to bit in their teeth, and they've been raising rates because they want to get back to normalcy. Well, the problem is nobody knows where normalcy is. An old normalcy may not be new normalcy. So let's just make the Fed data dependent and get rid of this other stuff.
Thanks so much, Bob. Bob Bruska, chief economist at Fact and Opinion Economics in New York. Coming up, concerns over harassment may be having a negative impact on women in the workplace.
Information you can bank on. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Some men on Wall Street and in corporate America are reacting to the Me Too movement by simply staying away from women. We're joined on the International Auto's Orland Park business line by Jillian Tan, a reporter at Bloomberg News in New York. Jillian, give us some details here. What's going on? Also, Wall Street, corporate America in general.
Yeah, thanks for having me. We, my colleague and I, Katia Pozakansky, reported, I think it was a couple of weeks ago now, but that things have changed a little bit on Wall Street since the Me Too movement. There are men that are sort of afraid, I guess, of being accused of improprieties linked to the Me Too movement. So as a result, some are refusing to have dinner with female colleagues below a certain age. They're changing their travel schedules, not sitting next to colleagues on flights, or moving their hotel room floors if they happen to be interstate or in another country. And yeah, just really showing hesitance to interact with sort of younger, more attractive colleagues especially.
So what kind of an impact does that have on those women in the workplace?
Yeah, so I guess the overarching impact is gender segregation. The real sort of loss that could occur is the mentor-mentee relationship that has occurred over years and has gotten some senior women on Wall Street to where they are today. One massive fear is that if men sort of keep sort of paring back their interactions with their younger female colleagues, it could just lead to more men in senior roles and sort of, you know, reverse any sort of equality that has been achieved so far.
Well, Gillian, you have written about this and about the protectiveness that that you've been observing there. Do the CEOs know about this?
I think, one thing our story did was raise it to the level of like CEO awareness. The CEO of Jefferies Financial Group, which is a bank, he wrote a memo to staff last week saying there is no excuse to exclude anyone from business meals, top-level meetings, presentations, mentoring, travel, or social situations based on gender or any other designation. So it seems certainly that CEOs are aware. I think it's tough for them to sort of learn exact specific examples unless they're all reported internally, and there's obviously fear from the women in the workplace of sort of the ramifications on their own careers of flagging such behavior.
And this is something in, centered in New York, or we're talking about the U.S. in general?
Yeah, so definitely in New York and Wall Street, but also beyond. So we spoke to dozens of executives in New York and beyond. So I would definitely say, you know, I think you guys are based in Chicago. Definitely we spoke to folks there as well.
Seems like the answer might be figure out a way for women to feel safe in the workplace and not actually be harassed while also not completely segregating them. It seems like this solution, maybe it helps against any sort of false charges, but it's going to mess up some careers.
Yeah, I think it definitely could sort of hamstring a lot of careers, especially that of women. The New York mayor's office wrote us a letter and suggested some steps that men in sort of the senior position should take. They suggested men ensure they keep, you know, going through the motions of going to casual interactions, whether it's grabbing drinks or, you know, continuing to mentor the younger, both males and females, but to make sure that, you know, if people can just behave in a way that they would to their mother or their sister or, you know, other female relatives, then there's no reason that they should be fearful of stepping into anything in a work situation.
Did Vice President Pence and his thoughts on this, did that have an influence?
Well, we've coined the, I guess, approach, the changed approach, the Pence effect, to sort of...
What does that mean?
Michael Pence famously said that he doesn't have dinner with any women apart from his wife. And so that's, I guess, the same mantra that a lot of these Wall Street men are channeling.
All right. Good insight. Great column, great article, I should say. Thank you, Jillian Tan, reporter at Bloomberg News. By the way, Chris, this is why I've gotten out of ever buying you dinner all these years.
I'm over the age limit. Don't worry about it.
Saved me loads of money. Up next, an update on the markets from Bloomberg.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's get the latest on the markets with Elisa Peretti.
Chris, we are sinking with losses of about 1% on the day, down 6.5% to almost 7% here in December. The Dow is down to 23,861, lower by 238 points. NASDAQ falling 73 points to 6,838, and the S&P lower by 27 points. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg sliding almost 1%. Crude futures also in the red, down about 1.5% today to $50.36 a barrel. Now let's turn to Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal. Kurt?
Well, good afternoon, Lisa. Grain markets are mixed as we go through the noon hour. The trade seems to be waiting for additional news from China on bean sales. This morning's weekly export inspections report was at the upper end of expectations. The NOPA crush report was just a little less than expected, but the trade's starting to watch South American weather forecasts as they start to be a concern. Corn futures down a half to 1 cent, beans 4 to 5 cents higher, and the wheat market 4 to 5 cents higher. This is Kurt Kimmel, Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thanks, Kurt. I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Markets are lower at this hour. We'll see what's moving Wall Street.
It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll have some ideas from an investment pro.
The human element is less and less of a factor in trading these days. We'll discuss that and the credibility of the so-called Santa Claus rally.
Arguments over nominating petitions dominate discussion in the race for mayor of Chicago.
On Wall Street, the Dow down 269 points, NASDAQ down 79, the S&P down 30, and oil today is down nearly 2%.
And sunshine for the rest of the afternoon, a high temperature of 39. It's 39 right now at O'Hare. The wind chill index is 35 with sunny skies.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
Markets are starting the week on a down note. We're joined by Nick Raich, CEO of the Earnings Scout in Cleveland. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Nick. We're also hearing a number of people mentioning bear market. Where do you stand on that?
Well, if you believe we're heading to recession next year, this would be the start of a bear market. Our research is not indicating that we're going to have negative growth next year, that the direction of stock prices going lower, we agree with. The magnitude of this sell-off, we think, has become excessive. In other words, growth is going to decelerate in 2019, but there will still be growth. Those who are calling for the bear market right now are suggesting that a recession is in the works for 2019, and we just don't see any evidence of that in the data that we collect.
So how does that affect your plan then for the start of the year with that attitude about that we're not really, you know, jumping off a cliff?
Our attitude for what we're saying for stocks is we think if we could just have trend growth right now, and that's where the expectations of are being reset down to. Actually, when the market today, with the market off 250 points, it's projecting no or negative growth for next year. If we could just have normal growth of around 6 to 8% earnings growth in the S&P 500, which we think is very reasonable, and mind you, that's slowing from 25% this year. If you can just have that, you want to go long stocks, because once the market realizes that where there is going to be growth next year and not a recession, prices will need to reset higher to reflect better than expected growth. Now, again, if you think we are going into recession, you'd be a seller today. But again, there's nothing in the data that we collect in terms of the revenues being collected and companies reporting actual results that suggest the recession is on the horizon.
Now, is there a sense, broadly speaking, is there a sense in which stocks reached a point where they were overpriced? Would that be your opinion? And if so, is some of this pullback maybe a good thing and might not lead to a big jump if they see we're still going to get growth, as you're talking about?
Yeah, no, we would say they did get modestly overvalued, particularly in September. You know, we think we're scarier for stocks in September than it is today, even though with the market falling, it feels scarier today than back in September when stocks were at all-time highs. But yeah, there was a little bit of weakening trends already building up over the summer and into the fall that made stocks a little bit overpriced. But now as they pull back here, and again, we think the direction of stock prices should be lower over the past couple months. So we agree with the direction of the price lower, to reset lower, to reflect a little bit less growth than what we originally thought. But it shouldn't be so excessive that it's pricing in no growth or negative growth next year. That's where we think it's become excessive.
So we have the challenge of tariffs, possible more interest rate hikes. What sort of things are you watching as possible signs that there might be trouble ahead?
Well, that, you know, one thing that did set was a trigger to the sell-off was the fear that the Fed was going to keep tightening the screws on the economy by raising rates and tightening too much. They're going to raise this week 25 basis points. That's what's widely expected. Our take would be, with inflation not a problem and some global growth indicators slowing and some indicators in the U.S. starting to slow somewhat, the Fed should pause completely even this week and not raise rates. But if the Fed kept raising rates into next year and wanted to go down that path, yeah, they would choke off growth of the economy, and they would potentially make a policy error that would lead us to recession sooner than later.
But
we don't
think
they're going to go down that path, though.
They haven't indicated that they were going to do more next year on top of this week.
No, in October, Jerome Powell did, and then he's backtracked off of that here towards the end of November and this month. So the widespread belief in the market right now is they'll do a hike this week, one hike, and then done for a temporary time to just kind of wait and see what happens in the economy. So there is a pause now expected built in to 2019.
What sectors look good to you right now?
So we're still defense with, you know, real estate and some consumer staples, utilities towards the top of where we're at. What's starting to look kind of beaten down a little bit as an area we were underweight was technology. We're starting to see some really beaten down tech names here at some reasonable prices, some of which we don't want to jump in, but technology, we're starting to warm up here. Again, because the sell-off, it should have come in technology, and parts of those got inflated way too high. They're starting to come down to more reasonable levels.
You mentioned some are more attractive than others. Is the key there, I guess it's always the key, but is the key there really looking at earnings potential for the individual companies? Because it seems like some really have an opportunity to start moving, and others, it's going to be a challenge for a while.
Absolutely. And two, there's going to be two technology companies reporting today that are going to give us some news, and one would be Red Hat and Oracle. And Red Hat's been one of our favorites, but it's shot up here over the past couple months, and the estimate trends have weakened over the past year, but look pretty good. But that's going to be a bellwether, and Oracle after the bell tonight. Those are going to be two that we're going to look at to see if some of this sell-off is justified. And not only is those two, but later this week, we're going to hear from FedEx, we're going to hear from Nike, we're going to hear from Walgreens. We're going to hear their results for their November quarter ends, and they're going to be a great barometer of how overall fourth quarter earnings season is going to shape up, and that's not going to peak until late January 2019, early February. But again, these early reporting companies reporting November quarter ends with Red Hat and Oracle tonight are going to provide some real good clues to find out whether the sun's overdone or not.
Thanks for all the great information, Nick Raich, CEO of the Earnings Scout, online at earningsscout.com. Up next, exploring artificial intelligence in stock trading, finding out if you should believe in a Santa Claus rally.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's the time of year for the often referenced Santa Claus rally. While more and more trading is being done via computer programs, so is that still a thing? Joining us now on the International Autos Orland Park business line, Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Mark, for people who are not familiar with the term, tell us, what is a Santa Claus rally?
Well, that's a fair enough question. I found that I track a couple hundred advisors on a almost daily basis, depending on how often they update. And along about Halloween, believe it or not, they start referring to a Santa Claus rally. And I don't think any two of them have the same definition in mind. And so it's when Santa Claus's name is being taken in vain. We'll all be shocked to hear that, but nonetheless, they're doing it. And the only Santa Claus rally definition that I've found to have any statistical validity going back at least to the late 1800s when the Dow Jones Industrial Average was created is actually a fairly narrow period. It starts the day after Christmas and lasts through the first two business days of the new year. It's 6 or 7 days, depending on how the Saturdays and Sundays fall out. But it's a relatively short period of time. It does have an above average chance of an increase for the stock market. But for the rest of the time, it's no better or worse than any other time of year.
Doesn't sound like you should necessarily make that a part of your investing strategy.
Well, that's right. I think, this is the problem with looking at these things from a very rigorous point of view. You get very quickly cynical about how many stories get told by Wall Street as to why you should be doing this or that. And, of course, we have to remember that Wall Street gets its money by charging for transactions. They don't really care whether the market goes up or down, but whenever you buy or sell, they get a little piece of the action. And so they're always coming up with stories that at least have a superficial plausibility to them that would give you a reason why you should be increasing or decreasing your exposure to the market. But as soon as you subject them to statistical scrutiny, in almost all cases, they fall apart.
Not necessarily someone sitting at a desk working this all out. It could be all being done by a machine.
Well, that's right. And that is a real big concern. I think, in one sense, I think we probably exaggerate the role of machines. I mean, what machines do is just do what we do, only quicker and hopefully more objectively. On the other hand, if indeed there is a tendency for the market to go up in a certain series of days before Christmas, let's say that part of the Santa Claus rally story were true, then the computers would pick it up. What the computers won't do is make up something and make it look like the market does better when in fact it doesn't. So I suspect there are plenty of algorithms out there that give a seasonal bias upwards for the market between Christmas and the first couple of days of January. The worry as more and more of the trades get motivated by computers and get executed by algorithms, what will happen is that it'll kill the goose that lays the golden egg. Because if too many people act, or too many computers in this case, act on the assumption that the market will be higher than that period of time, then they're going to start buying on the day before Christmas. Why wait until the after Christmas for the rally when it already presumably will have begun? And so then people will start seeing the rally get earlier and earlier in the year, and then eventually it'll just dissipate. And this is just in general a worry, I think, about the markets in general. The things that seem to work before tend to gradually evaporate as more and more people operate and act upon them.
What do you suggest that investors should do?
Well, I think in most cases, you know, we should be long-term investors, and we shouldn't really be changing our exposure that much, give or take, because of these seasonal patterns, even the ones that even have some modest statistical validity. So I think that's the best thing we should do as a general rule. The only seasonal pattern that I think does make sense to act upon this time of year is that if you are planning to sell, you might wait until the first couple of days of January to sell, because chances are the stock price will be a little higher. And if you were trying to buy, I'd say wait another week or so right before Christmas, and then you want to buy. So you want to take advantage of these seasonal tendencies if you're going to be making transactions anyway. But for most of us, I think we should just pay attention from the point of view of entertainment, but not really pay a lot of attention from the point of view of making transactions in our portfolio.
Thanks, Mark Hulbert. Always good to hear from you. Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. This time tomorrow, Travel Tuesday. Still to come, our Monday stock picker.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's a Stock Picker Monday here on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Geiger Wealth. And helping us out this afternoon, Chuck Carlson, CEO at Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter in Hammond. What's your first pick, Chuck?
The first pick is Intel, symbol INTC. You know, technology group obviously has been pretty hard hit here in the last couple of months, with most technology stocks falling, including Intel. But at the end of the day, you know, the good ones in that group are probably worth taking a look at from a buying perspective, because they have gotten pretty cheap. Intel has not fallen as much as some of the other players in that area. The dividend yield of 2.5%, I think, is providing some support. I expect the dividend to increase pretty nicely in 2019, and I think their earnings are going to hold up pretty well also. So for investors looking for kind of a growth and income play with a little bit lower volatility in that space, Intel, I think, is a nice stock here at around $47 a share.
It's been around forever and very successful still. What would you recommend, getting into it now or waiting a while?
Yeah, I think, you know, trying to pick that perfect time most of the time is not the right way to go, because you end up not doing anything and then the stock goes up. I think the way to play a stock like Intel is, you know, maybe this isn't the bottom in the stock, but you know it's a lot cheaper than where it was 3 months ago. So if you start nibbling, and let's say, for example, you wanted to take a position of 500 shares, maybe you go out and buy 100 to 200 shares right now and just kind of see how that plays. But to do some nibbling on that stock at these levels, I think, is appropriate.
Okay, so Intel is the first pick. What's the second pick?
Second pick is a little bit of a smaller technology play. Market cap is around $5 billion, and that's Ciena. C-I-E-N is the symbol. The company makes a variety of hardware networking products. And what I like about Ciena are two things. One, their operating momentum is quite strong. The company just came out with earnings about a week ago that were solid. They gave solid guidance. And the stock has actually been quite resilient relative to the rest of the technology area. And I think, you know, when you're seeing stocks in down groups that are showing resiliency, that to me indicates that the stocks are in reasonably strong hands. You know, given the downturn today, the stock has pulled back a little bit, but I think that's offering a pretty good opportunity. Stock trades in the $33 range, so it's fairly affordable from a per-share price tag. And all in all, I think a nice play, again, in the technology space. I think people could nibble here as well, and if you see it down close to $30, $31 a share, they could buy more aggressively. That's Ciena. C-I-E-N.
Yeah, you talk about this market downturn, obviously scary for some investors, but really presenting some opportunities overall.
It is. I mean, I think you have to be careful. You know, we did get pretty significant new lows posted in major indices on Friday, including the Dow Jones Transportation Average and the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So that, from a Dow Theory perspective, was not a positive, to say the least, and has turned the major trend negative here. So I think you have to be cautious. We're at a time of year here, too, where you get some kind of crazy trading that happens. You've got fewer people participating because of the holidays. You've got year-end window dressing. You've got year-end tax loss selling. So you're going to get these swings here, but I think you're right. You need to be vigilant. You need to remain engaged in the market and take advantage of some of these opportunities. Even to do, you know, modest buying, you need to take some advantage of these.
All right, Chuck, thanks for joining us today. Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter in Hammond. You will find past programs later today, a podcast at this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. We're wrapping up the noon business hour with a check of a falling Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, during the noon business hour, we've seen the market really sell off. The Dow is now falling 366 points or 1.5%. We're at 23,735. NASDAQ down 1.5% or 107 points, looking to slip through the 6,800 level. The NASDAQ down 40 points. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg also lower by about 1.25%. Our month-to-date losses now 7% or more. With the Federal Reserve set to begin a two-day meeting tomorrow, Wall Street is still jittery about trade and geopolitical tensions and a possible government shutdown on Friday. And home builders aren't the most confident bunch. The National Association of Home Builders Confidence Index is at a three-year low, in part because sales of single-family homes slipped to a three-year low. The key part of that is mortgage rates. They're already at a seven-year high, and they could head still higher if the Fed does raise interest rates this week for a fourth time this year. The expectation is that they will. Crude oil futures sinking almost 2% now, down to $50.26 a barrel, lower by 13% for the year-to-date column. And all three of the main averages also in the red by 1.25% to more than 4% for the year. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.